from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Quick, analogies are to the SAT as A, hot dogs are to baseball, B, corsages are to proms, C, anxiety is to college admissions, or D, it doesn't matter anymore. The answer is D. Starting in March, the SAT is dropping the time-honored analogy section of the test. And that's just one of the changes. The new perfect score is not 1600, but 2400. Get ready for more math, a grammar section, a timed essay. Just the thought may have you chomping on a number two pencil. Few things bring more fear to the hearts of students across the country or ambivalent flashbacks to many adults than those three simple letters, SAT. How a student performs can make the difference between the school you want and the school you think you don't. Tonight on Point, the saga of the SAT, the latest twists in the test that weighs and sorts America's youth. We begin tonight with a closer look at the new SAT. Eric Hoover is senior editor with the Chronicle of Higher Education. I asked him why these changes and why now.
Depending on who you ask, you might get a different answer. The College Board would emphasize that over the years, the SAT has not remained set in stone or concrete. In fact, the test has evolved over time to keep up with changes in high school curriculum. So this isn't the first time that the test has evolved. One theory as to why it's evolving at this time, however, would be that the SAT, run by the College Board, was eager to please its largest business partner, and that was the University of California system.
And why does California want such a different test?
Well, the University of California system leaders were skeptical that the SAT was still serving the best interests of its students. And one component that they particularly wanted to see in a new SAT test was a writing component, the essay portion of the new SAT that we've heard so much about and that students, parents, guidance counselors, and college admissions deans are still trying to figure out exactly how that's going to fit into the new admissions equation.
So let's look at the new format that's coming. Sure. Just for starters, the famous 1600 perfect score will no longer be the top score. As I understand it, it will be 2400, three sections in the test, 800 each.
That's true. The perfect 1600 has gone the way of the dinosaurs. It'll be three sections, the verbal section, there will also be a writing section, and the math section, each counting for 800 points.
Okay, and the writing section will not simply be one score of 800 on an essay, but a single essay plus other components?
That's correct. Students might only be focusing on preparation for the essay right now, but there will be questions that get at a student's ability to reason through whether or not a sentence is constructed correctly and whether or not words and verbs in it are used correctly.
So it's a matter of identifying correct usage, not necessarily labeling it as pluperfect or the passive, et cetera.
As I can tell, it seems to be a nuts and bolts test that will try to gauge to what extent students have been able to apply what they've learned through reading and their own writing in classroom onto a test that is asking them, I think, pretty concrete and grounded grammatical questions.
Then in the verbal reasoning portion, the change that we're hearing about is that analogies will be dropped. Why?
College Board has said that they had just become outdated and that there are probably more direct and practical ways to measure a student's ability to determine if grammar was correct. I think what the board really wanted to emphasize with that change was to tie very closely what the test examined to what was being taught in a classroom. And I'm not sure if there ever was a high school lesson on analogies.
But it was always assumed, I guess, that it was a matter of mental agility, that if you learned how to think, then analogies would test that. If they're looking more at what you've been taught, it would seem more than ever that your score will depend on the quality of the specific education you got at your specific high school.
That is the key question. College Board would say that certainly the test will reflect inequities in the educational backgrounds and experiences of the different students who take it. Depending on who you ask, that means that the test will inevitably help some students and hurt others, not because of any design flaw in the test, but just because of what it picks up. And it certainly, I think, is reasonable to say that it does reflect disparities of all kinds and gaps between students in terms of their background and the type of high school that they go to.
Now, the math section, they're talking about higher-level math, about more advanced algebra questions in the new test, which will be given for the first time in March.
That's right. And I think there again, the College Board was hoping to continue to drive what's taught in high schools to allow students, if not encourage students, to take higher level math courses through Algebra 2 before or during their junior year of high school.
What have you heard from high school guidance counselors and from college admissions officers about what they think of the big change coming down the pike in the SAT?
Well, I think what I hear on both sides is that despite the anxiety that this change has caused among students and their parents, that this really isn't a brand new car we're talking about. It is the old car with some modifications. And if you want to consider the essay portion, kind of the cargo cabin that the car is pulling behind it. And I say that because, at least on the college side, many admissions deans that I talk to are not quite sure how exactly they're going to deal with this writing sample that students will be required to take as part of the SAT. But colleges themselves at this point, most of them are not requiring that students submit that SAT. So,
in other words, they're going to look at the same old 1,600 points and forget the third writing segment?
Well, they are not going to forget it. As I hear, the question now is how are they going to use it? The main drive and impetus behind the creation of the writing portion was the growing concern that students were submitting, as part of their application essays, very polished writing samples to admissions deans.
As in perhaps professionally polished, not written
exactly
by themselves.
Exactly, mom, dad, or someone that was hired for hundreds of dollars.
So will the actual essay written for the SAT be available to college admissions offices rather than just the score they receive on it?
Absolutely. That has been part of the College Board's plan all along. The thinking is that colleges will be able to look at the raw essay as they're considering a given student for admission and not just the score.
So the world turns and a whole new twist there as well, with colleges looking right into that new SAT essay. Eric Hoover, thanks a lot for giving us some insight on what's coming down the road here.
Thank you.
Eric Hoover is senior editor with the Chronicle of Higher Education. He spoke with me from Washington. We are looking tonight at the newfangled SAT and its extreme makeover, nip and tuck, call it what you will. You can join the conversation. An SAT without analogy questions is like, what, a tuna casserole without what? And did you take the old SAT last Saturday? Are you bracing for the new test? Is this the best tool we can muster for sorting America's young adults? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now in the studio is Ted Sutton. He's an educational counselor and tutor. For the past 30 years, he's worked with students taking the SATs. He is not taking the changes to the test lightly. His opinion piece, Analogies Are to SATs, What Babies Are to Bathwater, appeared last week in the Boston Globe. Ted Sutton, thanks for being with us tonight.
Good to be here.
So here you are. It's an extreme makeover, or as you call it, a nip and tuck. Why is this going on, Ted? You've been immersed in this world for many years. You followed all the twists and turns of the SAT. Why this change? Why now?
I think they're making the change because they're afraid of losing customers. As it was just suggested, 180,000 customers in California, potentially down the drain. So they want to look good. They want to come up with a new model. As they said themselves, there was problems with alignment, and they wanted to correct those problems.
Alignment between what and what?
Between the test and how it can predict how well you're going to do in school.
And so the university, or California, the state system in California was saying, we're not going to use this anymore?
Yeah, the president was saying, we're not going to use it anymore, or was considering it and throwing it out as an idea and saying, we don't want to use it anymore. And the College Board got scared, and they did what they did 12 years ago, I believe, which is they changed it. They're sort of grooming it a little differently. It looks different. It is different, but I don't think it's as good a test.
And that is because?
Because what they're doing with the writing section, for instance, they're saying we're going to reward people who in 25 minutes can come up with an essay, and that's going to be the kind of essays we expect in the future. 25, even though they're saying it's going to be a rough essay, mm-hmm. that if you can do a 25-minute essay, introduction, 3 supporting paragraphs, conclusion, you know, a certain kind of essay, we're going to give you points for that. But
what's the problem with that?
The problem with that is that the one section of the SAT that allows for thinking outside the box, the analogies, is now down the drain.
You love the analogies section. In the essay you wrote last week, you said it goes all the way back to sort of ancient Indian philosophers, the era of the Upanishads. Remind us of that history of analogies.
Okay, it goes back. I thought at first when I started to write the article that it would be, you know, the Greeks, analogies, the Greeks,
yeah.
You know, Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, all that stuff. But in fact, it goes back 5,000 years to the Hindu sacred texts, the Upanishads,
mm-hmm.
to the teachers of these texts who were called enigma makers.
The enigma makers. I love that. It sounds like superheroes in some new story.
Right. And they didn't say memorize this, memorize this, and memorize this. They didn't allow multiple choice. Students were taught to use their ingenuity. They would throw out puzzles. They would throw out mazes. They would throw out questions that didn't have immediate answers. And they would throw out analogies. And it was their hope, when you didn't have the immediate answer, when it wasn't memorized, that you would have to puzzle over it. And that puzzling over it could be a transformative and profound experience, much more so than simply memorizing a text or reading something.
We can all recognize that as really using your brain. Remind us of the kind of analogies that have historically, I mean, up into last weekend, been part of the SAT.
Okay. I guess this is why I'm mad that the analogies are going, because they're down the drain, and in the drain, in the writing section, for instance. Well, let me remind you of the analogies. For instance, bold is to foolhardy,
as
generous is to spendthrift.
Bold is to foolhardy. Okay, as generous is to spendthrift. All right, give us another. We're getting back in the group here.
Okay, walk is to scurry. As jog is to, you go ahead.
Walk is to scurry, as jog is to dash.
Oh. That's fine. Or sprint, or
sprint.
Go faster.
Okay.
So I'm gonna give you a test.
Listeners, take this test at home.
Okay. Submerge is to water, as bury is to
earth.
Good. Right away. Antibiotic is to infection, as antidote is to
poison.
Okay, one more. Emollient is to soften.
I'm breaking out in a sweat, yes?
Emollient is to soften.
Yes, yes.
As oil is to
Rust. Is to lubricate.
Exactly.
okay, stop.
Okay.
I'm going to be sprouting number two pencils right out of my ears. Now, that's all gone.
That's all gone.
And in its place comes?
In its place comes some more reading comprehensions. Just what kids are looking
those
for.
Those fat paragraphs with multiple choice and interpretations below.
And in its place comes a longer test, because the ETS has assured us that they've done research and showed that we shouldn't be afraid of a longer test, that adolescents can take a test up to 5 hours long.
But here we're
without
talking 3 hours and 45 minutes. It used to be called the Scholastic Aptitude Test, right? Now, but aptitude suggests not what you've learned in school, but what you might learn in college, at least as I read it. If you take away things like analogies, I realize they don't even use that full name anymore. It's just the SATs now.
Right.
But is it still an aptitude test?
Grades predict more. Grades are a better predictor of how well you'll do in college than the SAT. Look, if someone got a 1600 or on the new analogy a 2400 and they were motivated and studied 4 hours a night, they're going to do well in college.
Period.
You know, no one can do that. But I've seen students who have gotten on the old verbal a 460, which is not a great score, go on to Yale and do beautifully. And
I'm sure their ears are all perking up right now. How do they do that? Boy, they must kick a mean football.
Not football, but because they think differently, because they're allowed more time on their tests, because they're allowed to go outside the box.
Ted Sutton, stand by. We're going to be hearing tonight from the folks who make the SAT, from the folks who coach students on how to take the SAT. We're talking about the saga of the SATs, the latest twist in the test that weighs and sorts America's youth. You can join the conversation tonight. An SAT without analogy questions is like a tuna casserole without what? Do you trust that the SATs are fairly and accurately measuring the potential of America's high school grads? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the SATs and the latest twist in the test that weighs and sorts America's youth bound, they hope, for college. You can join the conversation tonight. Did you take the old test last Saturday? High school students across the country did. How was it? And are you bracing for the new test, the one coming in March? Do you know why it's changed? Are you glad that analogies are gone, that there's more math, that there's an essay portion? Do you understand why? And is the SAT a neutral testing ground? Or has it been scammed and corrupted by all that test prep and private coaching out there? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I've been joined in the studio tonight by an educational counselor, Ted Sutton. He's been working with students on the SATs for 30 years now. We're joined now from Washington by James Montoya. He is Vice President, Western Regions for the College Board. Before 2001, he was, had several positions at Stanford University, including Dean of Admission and Financial Aid, Vice Provost for Student Affairs, and now he's a powerhouse in the powerhouse that makes the SAT. James Montoya, thanks for being with us tonight.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
So let's hear it from you. Why this big change in the SAT and why now?
Well, I think we have to go back to the fact that the reasons that colleges and universities use the SAT is because the combination of high school grades and SAT scores have greater predictive value than either grades alone or test scores alone. I think many people would be interested to know that of those students who take, for example, the SAT, about 40% of them report having a grade point average in the A range. So it's really helpful to colleges and universities to have other information that can be helpful in making thoughtful decisions about those who will be admitted to the university.
We get that. So otherwise, you've just got a whole lot of kids coming out of high school with very similar-looking grade profiles. The SAT helps sort them out. But the question stands, why these changes and why now?
Well, I think the changes that we are looking at, particularly the writing, comes from the 1990 Blue Ribbon Panel report that suggested, in fact, that the SAT include writing. They also included that we eliminate, for example, antonyms, which we did in 1994, that there be longer reading passages, that the math section include self-produced answers rather than all multiple choice, mm-hmm. or the use of calculators. So all of that was introduced in 1994. We now have the technology that really does allow us to think about writing more seriously. As was pointed out by Eric Hoover earlier, we see that the new test will be more closely aligned to how students learn in the classroom. For me, particularly as a former dean of admission and someone who continues to teach at the university level, I want to see the SAT be viewed as a tool rather than just a test, and therefore the new diagnostic component, which will give students feedback on those critical thinking skills in reading, writing, and math that colleges and universities feel are essential for college success.
Now, what do you say when you say the new diagnostic component? What do you mean?
Students will actually get feedback on their skill level in particular areas that will help them identify areas where they need to work harder.
You mean feedback in the form of a score?
Pardon?
Feedback.
Oh, it's beyond a score. Of course, as you mentioned before, students will receive three scores from 200 to 800. But in addition to that, just as today they are receiving on the PSAT, the preliminary SAT, actual feedback on specific skills that will be useful to them once they are in college. In addition, I think it's important to address the question, why now these changes? Well, admission requirements change. And for example, most four-year colleges now require 3 years of mathematics, and it's important that the SAT reflect college requirements. And of course, we want to reinforce the overall importance of writing. I would add that as we look at the bigger picture of higher education, many people are surprised to learn that only 38% of current high school students will go on to any form of higher education. 26% will not persist beyond the freshman year. And actually, of those who are currently in high school,
only 18% will graduate from college in a six-year period.
No kidding. I don't think that lines up with the impressions of most Americans these days.
I know it doesn't. And one of the reasons for that is because we have such a huge loss in our American schools between ninth grade and 11th grade. But the point is, even those who start college are entering often with the need for remediation. What we hope to do by making the test more accessible, more understandable, using words like writing, reading, mathematics, is to help families, help counselors, guide students in those skills that will be necessary for success in college. It's not just about getting into college. It's finishing college with a good experience, a good academic experience.
And what about the way in which the SAT measures people's readiness for college, how they're prepared? You know, you've had the 1,600 top score, average score, of course, 1,026 in the most recent year. I guess, what, about 1.5 million students took the SAT. That also lines up with what, when you look at this ethnically or racially, white students got kind of right on the button, right on that average. Asian students higher, 1024. Black students, 857. Mexican Americans, 909. What do you read in those racially divergent scores?
Well, as Eric Hoover mentioned before, certainly the test scores reflect inequities in K-12. But what we do know is that across all ethnic lines, across all socioeconomic lines, students who take the most rigorous course load, on average, do better on the SAT. So it's important that we encourage all students, starting in the ninth grade, to take rigorous course loads.
And what about those beloved analogies, at least beloved to my guest here in the studio, Ted Sutton? Why are they gone?
Well, again, I think it reflects, as was mentioned earlier, the new test is more closely aligned with how students learn in the classroom. I think one of the criticisms of the SAT in the past is that several of the question types that students face on the SAT, whether it be analogies or the quantitative comparisons, they only face when taking a college entrance examination such as the SAT. And the point here is to have questions that are not new to students. One can measure analogical thinking through short passages, but making the test more accessible to students and yet at the same time making certain that the new test will serve admissions offices in helping with the combination of grades predict college success.
He's going to do well there. James Montoya, stand by. Ted Sutton, you teach this and have taught it to an awful lot of students, guided them into the SAT. Here you've got a mucky muck right from the College Board. He says, hey, we don't need analogies, and it's you know, we're just keeping it aligned with what colleges need, giving feedback to students that they're going to need. What's your question to the man in the middle here?
Well, there's two questions. One is SAT, it's not I'm sorry, the analogies aren't rocket science. You can learn how to do an analogy in 5 minutes. And most students who walk into the SAT have done lots of them and practiced lots of them. That's one. My question is, it's wonderful that we want to reinforce writing, and it's a laudable skill. But my question is, how do you do that when in a 25-minute these 25-minute essays are handed over to evaluators who will spend four-hour blocks giving each of the tests, each of the writing samples, 1 to 2 minutes of their times? So there'll be times when people will read 240 of the same essays, have to evaluate them, have to give them numbers that will then go on to college and determine their futures.
So you're saying too short an essay and too short a time and too short a time, right, reviewing it.
If you read an essay, the same essay by 240 different people in 4 hours, how would you feel?
Cross-eyed.
Okay.
Ready for a nap. James Montoya, how are you going to effectively assess that vast number of essays?
one of the reasons that the College Board has waited until this point, and I mentioned before that now that we have technology on our side, we feel very confident given our experience in grading essays through the SAT subject test, the writing test, which many colleges have required along the way. But we have
1 to 2 minutes to grade each essay? It seems like not much time.
Well, actually, there is no limit on the number of minutes an essay will be read. Again, holistic scoring is very helpful to the process. Again, this is a critical thinking test. What is important is that the reader have an overall sense of the ideas that the student is conveying. And again, I go back to the point that the College Board is a membership organization of 4,500 educational institutions.
So what?
If indeed we do not get it right, believe me, we will
hear let you know.
From admission offices.
We're hearing from a lot of callers. I want to start to get them in. Jack is calling from Raleigh, North Carolina. Hi, Jack. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello. Hi. I just had a question for the president guy. I was just wondering what makes him think that an essay for 25 minutes is going to amount to anything, and like how the colleges view students, and what can you really write in 25 minutes, right?
Well, but everybody has 25 minutes, so it will be a test of what you can marshal in that time, won't it, Jack? Isn't that a kind of assessment of how effectively you can quickly marshal your thoughts in prose?
No, I don't think so. I took the SAT writing, basically, I think it all comes down to your experiences, right? Let's say the prompt particularly appeals to one of your hobbies or something that you're passionate about. Unless you know more, stuff about it, you're able to write something.
So if the topic hits something you know well, you'll be advantaged, and if it doesn't, you won't. James Montoya, what kind of questions will be presented on this essay?
These are persuasive writing. In our survey of college and high school teachers, they indicated that persuasive argumentative writing was rated most important and assigned most often in the classrooms. And actually similar to what colleges and universities still expect. We know the concept of the blue book, at least in my class, where students are asked to write 2 30-minute or 25-minute essays. On-demand writing is what we will see. And I think that we have to remember that college admission offices and admission officers understand that this is a first draft.
And that it's 25 minutes. Ted Sutton, you've got an example of something you're pulling out there. What's that?
Here are two examples I just want to read. This is a historic example because I downloaded it from the College Board today, and it's the first example of what the new essay will be like. Think carefully about the issue presented in the following excerpt.
Okay, we're ready.
People who like to think of themselves as tough-minded and realistic tend to take it for granted that human nature is selfish and that life is a struggle in which only the fittest may survive.
Ooh, sounds politically relevant.
And it sounds like the SAT. According to this view, the basic law by which people must live is the law of the jungle. The fittest are those people who can bring to the struggle superior force, superior cunning, and superior ruthlessness, adapted from Hayakawa, language and thought and action. Assignment. Do people have to be highly competitive in order to succeed? Plan and write an essay in which you develop your point of view on this issue, supporting your position with reasoning and examples taken from your reading, studies, experience, or observations.
Okay. Ted Sutton, what do you make of that question as an essay prompt?
One, this is this is the state of the art. This is the essay prompt. And what I make of it is I'm looking now right next to it at the Oxford Local Examination to get into Oxford College in England back in July 14th, 1932. Here's how they handled the same topic. Write a composition on only one of the following themes. An essay of about 3 pages is expected. Remember, regard will be paid chiefly to excellence of matter and style and not to mere length.
Okay, 1932, they asked.
And they gave you 4 choices, which I thought was nice, which may be good for the College Board to consider. Here are your choices. Write an essay about A, gossip. B, the pictures you would choose to adorn your room. C, the good old times. Or D, changing one's mind.
Wow, a lot more latitude there. James Montoya, how did you decide to craft this kind of question we heard here?
Well, one of the things that we wanted to make certain of is that students would be able to write from either their reading or their personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to make certain that questions were accessible, of course. We wanted to make certain that they were fair in the sense that they did not favor one group over another. We wanted to make certain that it gave students an opportunity to think critically, to examine the question, and really to focus, as I said earlier, on their collective educational experience and their personal experience.
James Montoya, we're going to hear in a few minutes from a test prep company representative. What's your sense of the SAT up through last weekend and with the new format of how important coaching and test prep, the kind of thing lots of families are paying for more and more in recent years, how big a factor is that? How much can it improve a student's score? And is that fair if it can?
Well, our research indicates that a score can improve 20 points, but rarely more than that. What's important from my perspective as I look at the new SAT is that we've really done away with the kinds of questions, and analogies and quantitative comparisons are two great examples of those kinds of questions, that, again, students felt that they needed to pay thousands of dollars for test prep. One thing I will add is that what we've tried to make available to students for free or for low cost is the kind of preparation, familiarity with the questions, without them having to spend thousands of dollars, and that they can go directly to the College Board website for.
To get a little test prep right there. Ted Sutton, what do you think? 20 points with good coaching?
No, many, many, many more points. And to hear about, I'm just so touched by what the College Board is doing here. In the line of all of the Stanley Kaplan's, Barron's, Princeton's out there, if you go to the bookstore now and look under SAT, there are shelves and shelves and shelves of books because there's money to be made. And, in fact, the College Board, and I would welcome hearing about this, writing their own books, their own series, going online for $59, coaching themselves. These tests are eminently coachable. And 20 points, a drop in the bucket.
James Montoya, we've just got you for half a minute more. I know more coaching, more coachable today than in the past. I seem to remember a time when I didn't know anyone who was coached for the SAT.
I think the new test is less coachable. I think what's important is that we've tried to make this test as accessible to students as possible. But there is no question that those students who are familiar with the kinds of questions that are being asked, who take practice tests, which we make available for free, and in fact take the PSAT, are in the best position to do well on the SAT. Of course, as I started off with in the beginning, across all ethnic lines, across all socioeconomic lines, what's important is that students take a rigorous course load.
Get a good high school education. James Montoya with the College Board, authors of the SAT. Thanks for being with us tonight. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the saga of the SATs and the latest changes in the mega test that weighs and sorts America's high school graduates. I've been joined tonight in the studio by Ted Sutton, an educational counselor and tutor in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And right now from Las Vegas, John Zeitlin, general manager of SAT and ACT programs for Kaplan Test Prep and Admissions. John Zeitlin, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you so much.
So how coachable is the SAT, and what about the new one that's coming out in March? More or less coachable than what you've had to date?
The new SAT is equal or more coachable than the old SAT. We're seeing that students can be able to raise their scores about 60 to 80 points per section. So that would be
three sections, almost 200 points if they do well.
Yeah, 200 points on average. There's obviously some variability from student to student.
Is that fair? Do you feel like a corrupter of the system, John? If they pay you, they get then maybe 200 more points. If they don't, they don't. Is that fair?
Well, we think it's critical that students from all levels of the demographic are able to have access to test prep. And in fact,
but of course they don't.
Well, actually, we work at Kaplan. We work with New York City public schools. We work with LA public schools. We work with thousands of students in the Atlanta public school system.
So incidentally, here and there. But I mean, nationally, what percentage of your kids are in that category?
I'm not sure.
More than five?
Sure. It's Say it again?
More than 5%?
Yeah, it's definitely more than 5%. It's certainly over 10%. And the thing is, you know, the private coaching is out there. It's you know, all over the suburbs. It's for many, many students. And
how will you teach the new essay, John Zeitlin? How will you teach the new essay?
Oh, the essay is – the key to the new essay is you have 25 minutes to respond to an essay. And as Mr. Montoya said, it is a first draft of an essay. And so what we teach students is how to deal with that time frame. It's very critical that they – when they see the prompts, that they have an idea bank to generate and that they spend their time appropriately. We don't want students rushing through the essay, and we also don't want them spending so much time doing their outlining and planning phase.
So be ready with a sense of how to go at it and throw it down briskly. Angel's calling from Providence, Rhode Island. Hi, Angel. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to comment that I think the writing portion for the SAT is a wonderful idea. I teach college, and I find that a lot of my students can't form like a good sentence, can't form an essay from beginning to end, don't know how to start it, don't know how to come to even a conclusion.
So you want them to be tested on the SAT so that they'll be taught to that standard?
I want them to be tested on writing, definitely.
So hallelujah, says the college teacher, bring me students who can write essays. Let's get another call here. Suzanne is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Susanna, you're on the air.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I just finished applying to college. And one trend that I was noticing was that a lot of the schools I applied to made it optional to submit the SAT.
So they didn't even require it.
Right. And so I was wondering if anyone could comment on where they see the SAT in the next 50 years or in the future, if this is something that will be outdated entirely or we'll just keep getting this nip-tuck that you're referring to.
The nip-and-tuck. We got it, Susanna. Ted Sutton, what about it? We've heard this. Fewer colleges requiring it, yet overall most do. What's the trend? Where do you see it going?
My dream is that what will happen 50 years from now is what will have happened to the Soviet Union, that the empire, which is the College Board and ETS, will crumble.
Why do you want that to happen? Don't we need a kind of universal tester?
I think we need one, but we need a new one.
Because it's
such an entrenched system. As John just pointed out, yeah, we're going to go and we're going to coach it in new ways. Every time they change, it's going to be coached in new ways. And when John mentioned something, I think he mentioned we're going to have idea banks where you can just sort of zoom into. Those will work. Those will get you the points. Those will get you into college. But when you have idea banks that you go to, you're going for the same old currency, and you're not allowing the light bulb to flash.
Right, with real, genuine thought in the moment.
Exactly.
But rather a kind of pre-stocked pond of things that you come into the test moment with. John Zeitlin, can you imagine a better test than the SAT, even if it might make your job more difficult in coaching for it?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean,
what would it look like?
Well, we'd love to see tests that test students on all sorts of skills, whether it's creative skills or manual skills or social skills. There's so many different skills that are important for people to succeed in society, especially modern society.
Did you say social and manual skills, like
hammering
and sawing, or what do you mean? Ballroom dancing?
Well, sure, manual dexterity, but social is an even stronger one. It's really important. In the work world, you know, being able to lead groups, being able to work as a team, that's probably as important as it is to be able to figure out, you know, to get your grammar absolutely perfect.
But in the world we've got, do you think colleges are going to be happier with their incoming students that are filtered by this new test coming out in March?
I think overall that colleges think that this is a step in the right direction. I mean, kids are showing up at college with poor writing skills, and so adding a writing measure really is a good thing. The big problem is specifically with the essay that the College Board just needs to invest more. A 25-minute essay is just ridiculous. It's just you can't measure students on a first draft. It needs to be a little longer essay, and they also need to invest more in graders so that you know, a kid works their whole career, their whole, you know, 18 years to put together a good college application. It just seems patently unfair that they have less than, that their essay is being given less than a minute.
A little more time in depth in assessing it. Ted Sutton, you sit all the time with students who are looking forward to this. Like it or not, it's a reality in their lives. What's your kind of fundamental philosophy from the Upanishads or anywhere else on how high school juniors and maybe seniors sometimes facing this ought to look at it?
Oh, I think they ought to look at it as a necessary, I mean, and they do look at it as a necessary evil, something that they have to go through to be able to leave home,
right,
go to the dorm, get out, go to college. But it's an extraordinarily dismal process. The tests they're exposed to and the practice test that they take over and over and over again that are filled with old SATs are dry and dusty and sort of turn them off. And that's what I find most distressing. Instead of exciting them and making them feel passionate, maybe excited, it's, what am I doing?
Well, we'll try and feel the passion tonight. Ted Sutton, thanks very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Ted Sutton, educational counselor and tutor in Cambridge, Massachusetts. For 30 years, he's worked with students taking the SATs. And John Zeitlin in Las Vegas, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Thanks so much.
John Zeitlin, General Manager of SAT and ACT programs for Catlin Test Prep and Admissions. Listeners, you can join the conversation online at onpointradio.org. Coming up, an inspiring message to those high school seniors who don't get in to the college of their choice. This is On Point. It is a dreaded sight for college-bound high school seniors, the thin envelope from the college of their choice. In many teens' minds, rejection from a college represents failure on their part. Maybe if they'd just studied a little harder or put a little more effort into that essay. But former Boston Globe columnist David Nyhan saw things differently. In 1987, he wrote a column headlined, "To Those Who Got a No from an Admissions Dean." It was so popular with readers that the paper reprinted the column annually for 15 years. In 2002, he read the column for us. David Nyhan died on Sunday. He suffered an apparent heart attack while shoveling snow after a weekend storm, but his wisdom stands, and tonight we hear it one more time as the late, great David Nyhan gives high school seniors a lesson in life.
The rejections arrive in early April in thin, cheap envelopes, some with a crummy window for name and address, as if it were a bill, and none with the thick packet you'd hoped for. "Dear so-and-so, the admissions committee gave full consideration, but I regret to inform you we will be unable to offer you a place in the class of lots of applicants, limited number of spaces, blah, blah, blah. Good luck with your undergraduate career. Very truly yours, Assistant Dean Blowhard, Rejection Writer, Old Overshoe University." This is the season of college acceptance letters, so it's also the time of rejection. You're in or you're out. Today's the day you learn how life is not like high school. To the ins who got where they wanted to go, congrats, great, good luck, have a nice life, see you later. The rest of this is for the outs. You sort of felt it was coming. Your SAT scores weren't the greatest. Your transcript had some holes in it. You wondered what your teacher's recommendations would really say or imply. And you can't help thinking about that essay you finished at 2 a.m. of the day you absolutely had to mail in your application. That essay which was, well, a little weird. Maybe you could have pulled that C in sociology up to a B-. Maybe you shouldn't have quit soccer to get a job to pay for your gas. Maybe it was that down period during sophomore year when you had mono and didn't talk to your teachers for 3 months while you vegged out. What difference does it make what it was? It still hurts. It hurts where you feel pain most, inside. It's not like the usual heartache that kids have, the kind other people can't see. An alcoholic parent, a secret shame, a gaping wound in the family fabric. These are things one can carry to school and mask with a grin, a wisecrack, a scowl, a just don't mess with me today attitude. But everybody knows where you got in and where you didn't. Sure, the letter comes to the house, but eventually you've still got to face your friends. Any mail for me is like asking for a knuckle sandwich. Thanks a lot for the kick in the teeth. What a bummer. How do you tell kids at school? That's the hard part. the squeals in the corridor from the kids who got in someplace desirable, the supercilious puss and the ones who got early acceptance, or the girl whose old man has an in at Old Ivy. There's the class doofus who suddenly becomes the first nerd accepted at Princeton, the 125-pound wrestling jock who, surprise, surprise, got into MIT. But what about you? You've heard about special treatment for this category or that category, alumni kids and a legacy ticket, or affirmative action luckouts, or rebounders, or oboe players. Maybe they were trying to fill certain slots. But you're not a slot. You're you. They can look at your grades and weigh your scores and see how many years you were in French club. But they can't look into your head or into your heart. They can't check out the guts department. This is the important thing. They didn't reject you. They rejected your resume. They gave some other kid the benefit of the doubt. Maybe that kid deserved a break. Don't you deserve a break? Sure, you'll get one. Maybe this is the reality check you needed. Maybe the school that does eventually take you will be good. Maybe this is the day you start to grow up. Look at some people who've accomplished a lot and see where they started. Ronald Reagan, Eureka College. Jesse Jackson, they wouldn't let him play quarterback in the Big Ten, so he quit Illinois for North Carolina A&T. Do you know that the chairman of both General Motors and General Electric graduated from UMass? Bob Dole, he went to Washburn Municipal University. Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, Dennis Hastert, went to Northern Illinois University. Winston Churchill, so slow a learner, they used to write his mother to please come take this boy off our hands. I know what you think. Spare me the sympathy. It still hurts. But let's keep this in perspective. What did Magic Johnson say to the little boy who also tested HIV positive? He said, "You've got to have a positive attitude." What happens when you don't keep a positive attitude? Don't ask. This college thing, what happened is that you rubbed up against the reality of big-time, maybe big-name institutions. Some they pick, some they don't. You lost. It'll happen again. But let's hope it won't have the same awful kick. You'll get tossed by a girlfriend or a boyfriend. You won't get the job or the promotion you thought you deserved. Some disease may pluck you from life's fast lane and pin you to a bed, a wheelchair, a coffin. That happens. Bad habits you can change. Bad luck is nothing you can do anything about. Does it mean you're not a good person? People like you, if not your resume. There's no one else that can be you. Plenty of people think you're special now or will think that once they get to know you, because you are. And the admissions department that said no, screw them. You've got a life to lead.
Wisdom from the incomparable David Nyan, the former Boston Globe columnist, died over the weekend. He was 64 years old. We will miss him. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.